recorded live in the Phantasmo Lounge high atop the Sugatochi Komada building in beautiful Midtown Chesapeake, Virginia, it's Phantasmo After Dark with your host, Rob Floyd, and co-host, Professor Tony Mercer.
Hi, Rob.
Hey, Tony. Glad you could make it and join us again. It's been a little while.
Yeah, I heard you missed us. We're back. I brought my pencil.
I missed you, but I'll improve my aim. Hey, how about you there? Okay, enough shtick.
Never enough shtick.
Never too much shtick. Yeah, I don't think I've got anything to promote or publicize coming up anytime soon, really. The next Phantasmo is a few weeks away, and so we'll talk about that later. So let's jump right into it. Yeah, I didn't mention our topic tonight in that intro. I mean, the announcer didn't mention our topic tonight in that intro. Tonight, we're talking about Godzilla versus Megalon. Yes, my favorite Godzilla movie. Not saying it's the best one. I'm just saying it's my favorite one. That's all.
Gojira Tai Megaru, or Megalo.
What he said.
That's what it
sounds like. Michelob. I understand why they changed it. Now, you know, I saw this movie. First time I saw this movie, I saw it in a theater. I was a little kid. My mom took me to the Great Bridge Twin Theater on, I think it was a Sunday afternoon. And it was a bunch of other moms and dads with the little kids in there. And I got to see the first Godzilla movie I got to see in a theater. And it's, maybe that's why it's my favorite, but I think it's my favorite because of Jet Jaguar. And who doesn't love Jet Jaguar? If you don't love Jet Jaguar, I don't think we can be friends. Well, since we're talking about Jet Jaguar.
Yes.
Originally, this was going to be, they were trying to do a Jet Jaguar solo movie. And it was going to be Jet Jaguar versus Gigan. Or, I'm sorry, Jet Jaguar versus Megalon. But they started getting into production of it, or pre-production, and the powers that be decided that Jet Jaguar wouldn't be able to carry a whole movie. An unknown, character. So then that's when they added Godzilla and Megalon in, and they rewrote the whole thing. Does that concur with what you know?
Well, that actually happens, or variations on that theme happen a few times throughout the history of the Toho Godzilla films, particularly the first wave of them. And if you look back into the 60s, there's a couple of pictures where Godzilla's not even in the original title. So in the U.S. Yeah. release or international title, he was Invasion of Astro Monster, which was retitled as Godzilla versus Monster Zero.
Yeah. Right? Now, wasn't this like the second one wasn't released over here as Gigantus the Fire Monster or something?
Yep.
Yeah.
Godzilla Rays Again was renamed Gigantus the Fire Monster. And I think it was Gigantus, right? References to Godzilla were...
Yeah.
Not made in that original.
I think so, yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
It's been a long time since I've watched any part of it dubbed as Gigantus. So.
Well, you should.
I sort of left that behind. But anyway, so yeah, Godzilla versus the Sea Monster is actually Ebirah Horror of the Deep. And the story I always heard, and I don't know if this has since been refuted, but the story I've always heard was that it was always meant to be a multi-monster picture, but that King Kong was originally supposed to have been in the slot that Godzilla took.
Oh, wow.
And if that's true, and again, it's these days, it's easier than it used to be to get a hold of behind-the-scenes information this stuff. So it might have been refuted, but the fan talk was always that.
Yeah.
It was supposed to have been King Kong, and if you watch the picture, it even makes sense that it would have been King Kong at the scripting stage because, they've got that bit in it where Godzilla is enamored with the native girl. And some other, very Kong-like behaviors for... Godzilla.
Does it climb a building at all?
No, not that I recall.
It's been a while since I've seen it. I don't know. Now, it seems to be, you're the Godzilla historian in the room here. Well, the more knowledgeable of the two of us on Godzilla films in general.
Relative scale, I'll take it, sure.
Is there, or it seems to be, there are different factions of Godzilla fans, is where there's the original film.
Yeah.
Everybody loves. The consensus on that is pretty general. Everybody loves the original film. But then it goes on to where Godzilla becomes a good guy or the kid's hero. And there's people like me that love those films. And there's a faction that does not like those films and really loves the stuff after that, or at least loves the really is into that. What was that, the 90s stuff or the early 2000s stuff?
90s.
Which
and early 2000s.
I'm not a huge fan of. I can, because I like I like Godzilla being a good guy, but I don't dislike him. But is there a division in the Godzilla community like that, or am I just reading into it?
Yes, to some extent. I feel like that has lessened.
Yeah.
Over the years, just in terms of my own experience with the fandom, as it were, which is, you know, pretty much on the internet and amongst the handful of people that we know that are into this stuff.
Yeah.
I definitely think there people always have their favorites and fans always debate things.
Of course.
But in terms of there being sort of active factions for the
because I'm getting
different eras,
you know, old kiss, new kiss,
the different eras of Godzilla movies. I think that used to be more of a thing than it is now. But it's really, in my experience, not so much. I mean, everybody kind of has their opinion of whether or not they like or prefer superhero Godzilla from, you know, force of nature tearing up Japan rather than defending it.
Yeah.
But in my experience, it really breaks down more about there are three distinct series three distinct runs of Godzilla films that usually are considered to be eras unto themselves. And so the initial run of films, the initial series or era, is usually referred to as the Showa era, right? That is a Japanese term that refers to, I think it has something to do with the reign of a particular emperor. Isn't that right?
Good. It sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah, as I recall, it is tied to the imperial lineage in some way.
Yeah.
So there's a Showa era of Godzilla, which is the original 54 film through 1975's Godzilla versus, or Terror of Mechagodzilla.
Sorry. Okay. Godzilla versus the Bionic Monster.
Right. So basically, Toho was making Godzilla films or fantasy films with Godzilla in them.
Yeah.
From 54 to 75 consistently.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Then they stopped. And then Godzilla was revived in 1984 with Godzilla 1984 or Return of Godzilla, whatever you want to call it.
Or Raymond Burr Lives Again.
Right.
Okay.
So you had that movie in 1984, which was...
Wasn't it called
Raymond Burr put in and dubbed and released here as Godzilla 1985.
Okay. All right.
But, you know, the experience of Godzilla 1985 and the experience of Return of Godzilla or Godzilla 1984, whatever you want to call it.
Okay.
The experience of watching those two pictures are very different. I really like Godzilla 1984 a lot. I have no use for Godzilla 1985.
You know, I've never seen that version. I'll have to check that out.
I mean, even as a kid, I found it disappointing.
Well,
it was exciting just to be able to see a new Godzilla movie, but it was, you know, disappointing.
Yeah.
Anyhow, so the 80s period of Godzilla really only contains two movies. They did one, and then it took them a few years to do another, which they did in 1989. And then they finally got that series rolling properly, and it continued until 95 when it was stopped to allow for the TriStar Iguana Godzilla. So that era is referred to as the Heisei era, which is, again, a Japanese term for marking an epoch that ties somehow into the imperial lineage.
Gotcha.
Now, after the TriStar picture failed to spawn a franchise, Toho started making Godzilla films again with Godzilla Millennium, aka Godzilla 2000, which actually got a release here.
We went to the theater and saw that. Yeah,
and that kicks off another cycle of Godzilla pictures. Now, the years in which those were made, 99 to 04, I think technically that's still the Heisei area in terms of marking Japanese epochs.
Oh, okay,
but fans usually refer to that as the Millennium series.
Yeah. Okay.
To differentiate it from the Heisei series, because the Millennium pictures in the Heisei series, they are different approaches. They have a different look and feel.
Yeah,
markedly different designs for Godzilla.
Oh yeah.
the suit, you know, from 84 to 95, the suit changes several times, but he definitely has a consistent look. And then he has a couple of different looks in the Millennium that are, again, very different from the Heisei period.
So
I think, getting back to the original question, hey, tangents. I think that any sort of division of eras has more to do with liking one of those better than the others.
Yeah.
And I think maybe to some extent that has to do with a fandom that skewed older at one point than maybe it does now that we're deeper into the internet area and everybody has access to everything.
Could be.
Or whatever the case may be. But I feel like, and it might just be the locales I haunt. It could be that there's still a lot of this sort of division that goes on that I don't see because I don't see it. But I feel like there's less of that now. Honestly, what I have noted is that, and this is what goes on in my brain. So this could be something that no one else really identifies with but me. But the thing that is relevant to me, I would say, that I have noted as something of a division are folks who love Godzilla movies and the way that Godzilla movies are traditionally made are part of what they love about it.
Yeah. Okay.
And folks who love Godzilla as an idea or a character or an image, and that's why they love Godzilla movies, and they are indifferent to the way in which the movies are made. And what I mean by that is,
I'm following you.
On the one hand, you've got folks who the use of models and suits, and again, the way that stuff is traditionally made and shot is a part of the appeal.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what they're looking for. And there are some folks who, I saw this really sort of come to the fore when the pre-production on the 2014 Godzilla was happening.
Oh, okay.
People who love Godzilla, but if you could replace all that stuff with fancy CGI, they'd be thrilled. Right.
Oh,
it's like they're just sort of tolerating the way in which Godzilla movies are traditionally made because it's sort of feeding their fantasy of what Godzilla is. But if you can use fancier special effects to get, or more modern or whatever you want to call it, special effects to get to something closer to their ideal Godzilla, those folks are all about that.
And
are very enthusiastic for the legendary pictures and all the sort of American giant monster kaiju themed things that are happening, your Pacific Rims and your Kong Skull Islands and whatnot.
Which I'm interested in seeing that, but I'm not holding high hopes for it, but I'm interested in seeing it.
Well, the legendary Godzilla shocked me by not being terrible.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Did you think it was terrible?
You talking about the latest one?
Yeah.
Or the latest two? You know, I didn't even see it because I can't stand that design. It looks like he doesn't have a head.
Yeah.
It's like a neck with a mouth on it.
I completely agree.
And that just completely turned me off to the whole thing. Because the star of the picture doesn't look like the star of the picture to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just not an appealing design, and I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
I was curious about the film. How it was overall, but I couldn't stand to look at an ugly design.
Yeah, I agree. Now, my take on the design as it appears in the film was I didn't like the head. I liked everything else, didn't like
the rest of it looked great.
The first time I saw pictures of it, again, in the promotion before the movie came out, I didn't like the design, period. And you know how I get about monsters and robots.
Oh, yeah.
It's all about the design.
Well, it is, though. That's what they are.
Those Michael Bay movies, Transformers movies, could be great movies, or they could be what they are, which is terrible.
Yeah.
But they botched it right out of the gate with those horrible looking robot designs
that look like a trash heap walking.
And therefore I just don't care. Right?
Exactly.
It has to look cool. If I don't want to buy that toy, you've already failed.
That's right.
Anyway, so when I saw it in motion in the movie, I warmed to everything but the head. The rest of it I thought was okay.
Yeah.
But you know, I collect the X Plus Godzilla figures.
Oh, yes,
you do. Which are really accurate representations of, in the case of the traditional Toho kaiju, the suits.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're beautiful figures, too.
But they made a legendary Godzilla X Plus figure. So I'm back to liking the design less now. Because the X Plus figure is a really great, accurate representation.
Yeah.
And I look at that thing and I'm just like, my God, it's ugly. The arms are too long and beefy and the head is just exactly as you described
it.
A mouth on a neck. Yeah. And I just don't know what they were
going
for.
It's like it was designed to be filmed by at one angle.
Yeah.
To look cool, you know? But not...
You know what? You make a good point, and that might very well be why in the film where you don't see it a lot, frankly, and what you do see of it, they're going for beauty shots. It works okay.
Yeah.
But just to see it dead on in a figure or in a still or whatever, you just go, what the hell is that supposed to be?
Yeah, yeah.
But I was saying, unlike
the suit in Godzilla versus Megalon, which looks great from every angle.
Oh, we'll get to that.
That was that first segue, but which we're not ready to get back to yet.
I was just going to say that the legendary Godzilla was not terrible, and my expectations were so low that the movie probably played better for me.
Yeah.
I still have plenty of complaints about it, but I feel like it was, you know, for all my complaints, the design being a big one, it was respectful to Godzilla as a character in a way that I never expected it would be. And it must be understood. Godzilla is a character.
Oh, well, yeah.
Now, the nature of that character has changed here and there throughout its lifetime. Again, taking us right into the superhero era of Godzilla.
Da, da, da.
But I feel like the character of Godzilla as sort of a force of nature who is sometimes helpful and sometimes a force of destruction to mankind is sort of cemented in the 90s series.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's sort of come to dominate the idea of what Godzilla is as a character. And I think the legendary movie captures that aspect quite well.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not dead set against, I mean, I'll see the Kong movie if they do a Godzilla, you know, versus Kong, I'll certainly see that.
Yeah.
Of course. But it's not the same thing.
No.
You can make a CGI Godzilla movie that's great, and I'll enjoy it, and I'll say it's great. Not the same thing.
No.
This world of Japanese special effects that was born from the Godzilla series with the men in suits and the models and the
craftsmanship.
Yeah. That's what does it for me. So.
Yeah. Well, me too. I mean, I love seeing that stuff, you know. I think that's not the biggest, but part of the most appeal or biggest appeal of those films is you like, anybody watching them like seeing that stuff. You know, it's the, if you want to call it quaint or whatever, you know. But I like seeing the craftsmanship and the detail they put in these things. And sometimes it's super obvious. It's a little model. But it's awesome that they have it. And there's something physical there that's working and moving. And the guys in the suit, they move a certain way that, I don't know how good the CGI is, it's not going to move like a guy in a suit is going to move.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. And too, you know, how good looking some of the suits are.
Some of them are, yeah.
They don't look like it's a suit or a puppet. I mean, even though you know it is. You're looking at like, where the hell are they looking out of? Or where's the seam? I don't see it. It's just great stuff. And besides that, it's fun, goddammit. Where a lot of times the CGI stuff, it's just, it gets too serious and caught up in itself that it's not fun. Like Harryhausen movies are fun, or the Godzilla movies where there's physical objects there moving. And whether it's a dude in a suit or it's a model or a toy, you know, you could go somewhere right now and see that physical object you saw in the movie. You can see it on display somewhere.
You know, I don't mind kaiju films that are tonally serious. I don't insist upon it either.
Oh, I'm talking about the effects take themselves too seriously.
Right. Oh, I see what you mean.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, to tie into something that you just said, there is a sense when you watch the let's call it Eiji Tsuburaya style special effects, that it's sort of like watching people playing with toys, right?
Uh-huh.
But it's like, it's hard to verbalize this, but watching sort of the best model kit builders play with their toys in a really skillful way. That probably doesn't make any sense.
No, but
you know, and hey, I like toys, so whatever.
Well, who doesn't? And if you don't, you shouldn't be listening to this podcast.
But if what you want is, you know, I want to be tricked into thinking this is real on some level.
Yeah.
I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get the feeling like I'm watching somebody play with his models or whatever.
Yeah.
Then it's not going to be for you. But I mean, the best on the surface of it, when I'm watching these things, I am thinking about how it's done. I am marveling at how it's done. But then there's moments, are sometimes long moments or whole scenes where I forget.
Oh yeah.
All about the fact that I'm watching rubber suits and model sets.
Oh yeah, definitely. Me too.
You know, just a great moment or a beautifully lit shot or something that's really elaborate or cool or impressive or atmospheric or whatever it is that takes to sort of flip that switch and you forget all about it.
Yeah, well, it's always, to me, watching them, it's Godzilla's doing this, Godzilla's doing that. It's not the guy in the suit's doing this or the guy in the suit's doing that. You know, it's Godzilla's doing it. Godzilla's fighting.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
And even though I know it's a guy in a suit, I still get caught up in the fantasy of it and the fun of it. And that's the world that Godzilla lives in. Looks like that. And Tokyo looks like a model city or model cars in that world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can get lost in it, even though I know how it's done and know what it looks like. And it doesn't take me out of it where bad CGI does.
Yeah, you know, I think,
and even good CGI, when it's too good, and you know, it's like, I know that's all done in a little square computer screen box.
Well, the best you can hope for with that stuff is that you're not thinking about it, right? You're just not thinking about it at all.
True.
And it took the technology for me a long time to get there. I think it might have gotten there just in recent years to where I really stopped thinking about the fact that I'm looking at a computer image that doesn't quite mesh with everything else that's going on.
You know, a lot of times, though, I mean, I don't think about it consciously, but on some level, I kind of feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they call that the uncanny valley.
Yeah, I mean, you can just, it's just, it doesn't feel the same as something filmed on a green screen set does not feel the same as something filmed on a location, no matter how good the CGI is. You know, getting that? The recent Star Wars films is a good example. This is the most recent one I can think of. The ones that were filmed digital and on almost all green screen sets, good, bad, indifferent how you feel about them. I enjoy them. You know, not my favorite, but I enjoy them. It doesn't have the same feel as the more recent ones that were filmed more on location shots, the individual scenes. I'm not talking about the story at all.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I agree, but I think the thing that crotchety old dudes like us have to
amen
acknowledge is that we say something filmed on location doesn't feel the same as something filmed and then composited with a computer-generated image. And I think we're right about that. But in the modern day,
yeah,
filmed isn't even a prerequisite.
Well, okay.
Right?
I get
shot
you
on video for the YouTube generation. Things like this will matter less to future generations.
God,
but hey, you know, from what I can tell, there's a lot of young folks out there who are still into this stuff. So bless them. And
and this podcast is for you. But but hey, speaking of Godzilla versus Megalon,
hey, yeah,
somewhere down the road here.
Yeah. So it's your favorite Godzilla
movie?
It
is my favorite Godzilla movie. I can't remember if it was the first one I ever saw, but I know it's the first one that I got to see in the theater. And it just blew me away. You know, I was a little kid. I couldn't have been 7, 8, 9 years old, whatever like that. And in a theater full of a bunch of other kids, and Godzilla comes on the screen, and everybody's like, yeah! You know, cheering and stuff. And of course, Jaguar was just, to this day, is one of my favorite robot, you know, figures, characters, or whatever. It's such a great look and design. Like, took the best elements from a lot of the other giant robots or whatever and just streamlined it, made it look slick. And why was he not used in anything else? He's such a cool looking character.
Well, the series was kind of casting about trying to figure out what would work, or Toho was sort of casting about trying to figure out what would work to keep the movies profitable at that stage.
So yeah,
that plus a lot of, you know, behind the scene personnel changes and shakeups within Toho are sort of the broad answer to the question.
Yeah.
Now, if I remember correctly, Jet Jaguar was submitted, the design that would become Jet Jaguar was submitted as part of a contest, right?
Yeah.
Toho ran a contest. Did you mention that earlier?
No, but I read that not long ago. Yeah, it was like a young kid came up with a design. Yeah. They said it was a cross between Ultraman and like Mazinger, a great Mazinger or something like that, I think is what they said.
I can see
I can see
a little great Mazinga in there.
Yeah,
sure,
the mouth
yeah.
line and the eyes a little bit.
Yeah.
It was kind of a mashup or a composite of those two, and then somebody at Toho refined the design, and I think his name was Red Arone or something like that, but they refined the design and changed it to Jaguar.
It was something Ronin or Ronin something, wasn't it? I don't remember which one it was. But yeah, Toho came out with Jet Jaguar. That's not what the kid had originally called it.
But it's, you know, and I saw a picture not long ago, something I've never seen before in all my years. Thank you, Internet. A picture of the guy in the Jet Jaguar suit with the helmet off. So it destroyed my illusion that it was a real robot.
But he still had the big blue dickie, right?
Yeah, but it looked awesome. It's like, where's the suit? I want to see the suit now.
So the reason why I think they were casting around to figure out, or casting about, I should say.
Yeah.
Trying to figure out what to do next and what to go with to keep the series alive. And there are so many different, I think we started to talk about this and kind of abandoned it earlier, so many unused concepts and different things they talked about were going to try and make, including a bunch of movies that were proposed and dropped between 75 and 84.
Yeah.
That's a whole podcast in and of itself.
Well,
plus I'd have to refresh my memory on a lot of that stuff. But the history of why it was a struggle, I guess, to keep the series vital at that point is the factors involved there are the same factors that led, I would suppose, to there being a superhero Godzilla in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And for the movie's take, you know, going from the sort of family-oriented sci-fi or at least a veneer of sci-fi approach that they had taken in the 60s into the place we got to in the 70s that sort of culminates to a certain extent in Godzilla Megalon. Same reason, right?
Yeah.
And that is because of what was happening on television through the late 60s and early 70s in Japan.
Okay.
So when Godzilla first hits and becomes a thing in a series and they start, you know, making movie after movie in the 60s, if you wanted to see Daikaiju, giant monsters and things and flying saucers and things of that nature, you were going to go to the movie theater to see that. In the mid late 60s in Japan, that all changed in a big way. Now there might be some, you know, pre-Ultraman, pre-1966 television shows in Japan that we know nothing about that were attempting to scratch that itch, but you know, or Ultra Q, I should say. But you know, where it really starts is when Eiji Tsuburaya, who pioneered the special effects techniques that were used in the Godzilla films traditionally, left Toho and started his own production company, Tsuburaya Pro.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And they created a show called Ultra Q, which was an anthology series that, you know, did lots of different stories, not all of which had monsters in them. But in one episode, they introduced this superhero from space who became a giant to fight invading monsters.
And what was his name?
Well, his name was also the title of the second series they made, which was Ultraman. And now, with Ultraman, again, Tsuburaya and his team are behind this, the folks that had pioneered the special effects techniques that Toho used, they were giving you Daikaiju every week.
Yeah.
And a superhero to beat him up. So now it wasn't necessary to go to the movie theater and pay to see
damn
that sort
you
of
television.
Thing. You could get it at home on a smaller scale, on a cheaper scale.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you could get it, and the success of Ultraman kicked off a whole boom of henshin hero and daikaiju television that happened in the 60s, and then it waned a bit and then morphed into a second boom of tokusatsu TV featuring the henshin heroes in the 70s.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Kamen Rider and Inazuman and Kikaider and those guys. Also, another thing that was huge in the 70s that ties into Godzilla vs. Megalon is the super robot. So you had robots, of course, being a popular theme in Japanese animation and to some extent the live action stuff early on.
Even Tsubaidaman.
With Tetsujin, well, the early stuff, like Tetsujin 28 and Giant Robo and whatnot. But of course, in I think it was 71, we get the aforementioned Mazinger Z, or Mazinga Z, if you will, where Go Nagai adds the innovation of, let's not have the kid be friends with the robot or pilot the robot via remote control. Let's have the kid sit in its head and drive it around, right? And so, of course, this was hugely popular, and super robots became a fixture on Japanese television, typically in animation, but they did do some live action.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's lots of live-action giant robots in Japan, but specifically the one robot, one pilot sitting in the robot approach, there was a few of those in live-action as well. Anyway, super robots, very popular all through the 70s and well into the 80s over there. Then we also had the Gamera series happen, and you know, by the late 60s, Gamera had taken the super kid-friendly approach, where you know, the Gamera movies start off as a pretty straight-faced Godzilla ripoff and then eventually morph into what you think of with Gamera, which is the one Japanese kid and the one Western kid in their scout uniforms who are having adventures, and then Godzilla saves them from aliens. Gamera saves them from aliens or whatever. So now you had monsters and robots and all kinds of neat stuff on TV all the time, or at least it seems like when you look at the volume of that stuff that was made, it seems like it must have been all the time to have accommodated all of that material.
All kaiju, right? All the time.
That's
24 hours a day.
And then you had competition such as it was in the theater taking a markedly kid-friendly, aimed directly at the little kid approach. Plus, Tsuburaya gone. So yeah. With that alone, and Tsuburaya did not completely divorce himself from Toho. I think he did some consulting and some other stuff for them, but still, it was a knock to them when their resident genius was gone, and the special effects and the prodigious use of stock footage that comes after Tsuburaya's departure is sort of a testament to his absence. Let's say that. So all of those factors culminate in the Godzilla movies that we get in the 70s, where the identity, the sort of consistent identity that the 60s movies seem to have, and they did, is no more. And you are getting Toho sort of experimenting and trying different things. The psychedelia of Hedera and the sort of wacky comic adventure of Gigan, and then the Megalon, which is, to me, and this is both its great strength and its great weakness.
Uh-huh.
It's like watching an episode of one of these TV shows I'm talking about stretched out over 90 minutes.
Oh, I can fully see that. Yeah.
I've probably talked enough. Rob should talk now.
What is it we're talking about? Oh, yeah. I got something from Mayla. No, but what I was getting at earlier, though, is, just the design of Jaguar alone is such a neat design and a sleek look. That I'm surprised they didn't take advantage of it and fit him into other things or do something else with the character.
Yeah.
I mean, he showed up, there were a couple of action figures, and since then there have been more since the collector's market and all. But he never showed up in any other films or any other TV shows. They had the suit, and it's a great... I mean, even Godzilla, they repurposed that suit for an Ultraman episode.
Yeah.
One of the suits.
Yeah. Jiris was that monster's name, and they glued a big crest. I can't forget. I can't remember. I mean, the one lizard that has the big sort of flap or crest that it pops up when it's threatened or whatever.
Like a spitter.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. Jiris has one of those.
Yeah. But the Jaguar. It's, and maybe that's the appeal. Maybe that's the what holds the fondest with so many people, because people that love Jet Jaguar, like myself, love Jet Jaguar. And maybe this, because that's our only fix, is that one film. It's like a legend, like a rock star that died young.
Well, I think it has to do with that movie is a lot of folks' first Godzilla movie.
Oh, I'll buy that completely.
Which I guess has something to do with its history of, I guess, the fact that it got the theatrical drive-in run when it did.
Yeah.
With the generation that it did, and it's sort of ubiquity on television. For folks, particularly for folks of a certain age, Westerners of a certain age.
Yeah.
That's the one, either the first one they saw or the one they remembered, best from when they were a
and
kid,
it's just like
they saw it the most times.
With any series of films or whatever, your favorite, Bond, for example, your favorite Bond or Bond movie typically is the first one you saw with anybody. And that goes with just about any series or anything like that. The first one you saw is going to hold a special fondness and be your favorite.
And if you are our age or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And you had one of your earliest experiences when you were a kid with Megalon, Godzilla versus Megalon. It's probably Jet Jaguar is your first super robot. Maybe your only. That's another, speaking of sort of the temperament, if you will, of the Godzilla fandom, that's another thing that I think I've noticed is that amongst the hardcore Godzilla fans, you have folks who are Godzilla fans exclusively.
Uh-huh.
And don't really care about any of the other Japanese special effects and sci-fi fantasy action stuff.
Yeah.
And then you have folks whose love of Godzilla movies sort of lead them to finding all this other crazy stuff that I love so much.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of folks who probably got into super robots after Megalon.
Gotcha.
And Jet Jaguar was their first.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of folks that didn't bother with anything after, and Jet Jaguar is their only. Yeah. But in either case, super robots are awesome.
Well, yeah.
Jet Jaguar is awesome.
That's right.
The appeal. It's
got an awesome theme song.
It's one of those things you can't explain. It's like what I always say about the appeal of Transformers, right?
Yeah.
I say, it's a jet that turns into a robot.
What else you need to know?
If I say that, however you react defines. Because you're either going to be like, yeah, so, or going to be like, that is the coolest thing I have ever heard said in the English language by a human being in my entire life, yeah. Right? It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, the appeal too. I mean, you talk about being a kid and seeing it the first time, and the way the movie is geared towards kids, where is the little kid, the guy that builds Jet Jaguar, is it ever established, is that his little brother, his cousin, his nephew?
It's the professor's brother.
Okay, so it's the guy who builds Jet Jaguar.
Yeah.
It's his little brother.
Yes.
Okay, so you have this brother who builds this giant robot, or this robot who can turn into a giant robot, and is your protector and friend, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Well, there it is, right there. That's the appeal. Mm-hmm. I mean, what little kid would not want a robot friend, much less a robot that can turn giant?
Well, the fact that those three, I mean, there's other human actors that appear in the film, of course, but the fact that those three are the only prominent human characters in the movie, and they don't really get introduced. It feels as though, I mean, they sort of do, but not really, not in any meaningful way. And it feels as though you're already supposed to, you're either already supposed to know who they are, or you're not supposed to care. And in either case, that's kind of one of the many things that to me makes it feel like an extended episode of a television show. From
you came into the middle of the character's history,
right?
And you're just going
like these
with
three.
It.
They're just here doing whatever they're doing, and who they are and why they're doing it, you don't know.
Yeah,
but they're doing it,
and you don't care because Jet Jaguar.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then Godzilla shows up.
Yeah. And then Godzilla.
Yeah. And let's talk about the bad guys for a minute. The designs. Gigan has already been in another film. So we've
Gigan
seen
was
him.
Introduced in the film just before this one.
And a unique design.
Yeah.
You know. And then Megalon, very different design from stuff we've seen previous.
Yeah.
You know, I think that, I don't know if I ever said this before, but you know the Nolan Dark Knight movie, you know, I think the Bane stole Megalon's look for the mouth. Think about that mouthpiece thing. It looks like, you know, expected to open up a fireball shoot out of Bane.
Oh, if only.
Yeah. It would have been awesome.
That'd have spiced that picture up some.
But the design of all four of the monsters or giant characters in there are pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
Because some of the other ones in other films, it's like, yeah, it's okay design, you know. But Godzilla looks good. But this one, all four of them look pretty cool.
Well, Gigan looks like something a kid would come up with. Just like a kid would describe.
Yeah. It's got razors for hands.
Yeah. Got hooked razors for hands.
Who cares?
Has a buzzsaw on its belly and a...
So you mean the current editorial staff of Marvel and DC design? Oh! Did I say that out loud?
Don't insult whoever created... Gigan like that.
I'm sorry.
That's not nice.
We'll fix that in post.
I like Gigan.
But yeah, they all four, they look cool, and then they're going to, a good, what, third of the movie is just them on screen fighting. It's
I don't know if it's a third, but yeah, I mean...
the last act,
it
anyway.
It takes a while for Godzilla to join the action at all.
Yeah. Well, that's true. A good quarter of the picture, anyway.
Yeah. So we are... Jumping ahead of Rob, it's just like old times.
Yeah. But we're not going to go through the whole plot. But let's just, well, as a Godzilla movie.
As far as the Godzilla action.
Yeah.
Typically, like if you time it how it works, is that you'll see Godzilla in the prologue briefly.
Uh-huh.
And then you won't see him again until the half hour mark.
Oh, okay.
And then you'll get some Godzilla action in the half hour mark.
Yeah.
And then something will happen and that will sort of blow over. And then everybody will react to what just happened with Godzilla at the half hour mark.
Gotcha.
And somewhere after the 50 minute mark, headed into the last 30 minutes, you'll get the big Godzilla extravaganza. And then between those two points, he'll appear a couple times. In this one, you get a little Godzilla in the prologue, which is largely stock footage.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Then I think it's like 40 something, it's like 45, 40 yeah. something minutes before you see him again, very briefly.
Yeah, but you should get some Jaguar interspersed in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you get monster action. Yeah. You get Megalon on the rampage, and you get some Jet Jaguar.
It moves along in a pretty good clip from what I can remember. It's never a point in it where you're like, ugh.
Well, I think there's so much monster action towards the end that you forget how long you had to wait to get there. That's how it seems to me.
Yeah. But there's still, there's not a point in it that I can remember. I didn't get to watch it recently. Where you're sitting there going, oh God, this is taking so long. This is lame. Am I wrong on this? It moves along at a pretty good clip.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose so. If you're watching it waiting for the monsters to show up.
Oh, well,
especially if you're watching it waiting for Godzilla to show up.
Yeah.
It can feel long, but if you're just letting it be what it wants and do what it wants, just kind of watching it, there's always something amusing going on for the most part, so you're all right. Yeah, so
it's an enjoyable film overall, but you get the monsters on the screen, that's your money. That's what you've been waiting for. And
well, one thing I didn't, talking about how long it takes Godzilla to join the action, though.
Yeah.
One thing I did note this time was Gigan flies to Earth from the, what was it, Star Hunter M1 galaxy.
Okay.
In less time than it takes for Godzilla to walk and or swim from Monster Island to the Japanese mainland.
You ever try to walk through water? It's not easy, man.
It's like Gigan has time to fly in from space, kick the crap out of Jet Jaguar, and high-five Megalon before Godzilla can appear on Japanese soil proper.
He took a wrong turn to Albuquerque or something. Now, here's something. You're talking about how they're geared towards kids and, I guess, like a very watered down to be more family appealing and all. When it was released in the States, it was the first, I think, Godzilla movie given a real big showing, like in primetime TV. And I just found this out recently. It was introduced, they made a big deal of it. It was introduced by John Belushi in a Godzilla suit on primetime TV. Wow. I don't remember that. I do remember a skit on Saturday Night Live of John Belushi in a Godzilla suit and Barbara Wawa interviewing Godzilla. And he trashes a little model city showing how he does and talking about the rough stuff about filming and all this. And it had to have been the same suit. But man, I'm going to have to look for that clip, see if I can find that anywhere. John Belushi. I'm going to say it again. John Belushi in a Godzilla suit introducing the movie to American television. Now, apparently, too, there were some, to keep like a G rating for it, there were cuts. And little stuff, like where the airplane flies and hits the Cetopian guy in the face.
Oh.
A little bit of blood.
Well, yeah,
they cut that little bit.
He is left a bloody mess.
Yeah, they cut that out where the one of the bad guys like hits the kid and knocks him out. Violence towards children.
And they cut the part where, which is actually stock footage again, where Gigan dive bombs Godzilla and cuts him open and
the blood shoots out.
Yeah,
I remember seeing that.
Oh, okay.
But I think that was cut.
Oh, okay.
Or what, there was another scene too like that that was cut though, which it wasn't that bad of a cut. I mean, it wasn't anything that needed to be cut. At least it wouldn't nowadays for to get a G rating and all.
Well, we should talk about the Cetopians.
Let's talk about the Cetopians
because the Cetopians are fabulous.
Let's talk about that banker in the. That balding, super mustached banker in the toga.
The middle-aged white guy in his silky toga.
Oh, God, with the Harry Reams mustache.
And the Megalon tiara.
You know what it looks like? It looks like the guy, I can't remember his name right now, but it was the Judge Reinhold's partner in Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yeah.
It looks like that guy. He looks just like that guy.
Oh, I don't remember his name either.
But that guy put a toga and a Caesar leaf tiara on him.
it's a Megalon face tiara.
Okay.
He's got a tiara with Megalon's little face on. You didn't notice that?
I guess I haven't watched my Blu-ray yet.
Yeah, you better watch it again.
Wow. I must have one of those now. Hey, speaking of things I must have, when they released this at the theaters, it was released here in 76. They gave out at the theater, they had little buttons, little pinback buttons.
Yeah.
One for each monster.
Wow.
And I have seen a Megalon one on eBay. I have yet to see a Jet Jaguar. I must own one.
That would be cool.
How awesome would that be? Go see that theater. Here's your button, kid. Jet Jaguar.
So the Cetopian Emperor, Toga Man, spends his time down in Seatopia.
Megalon!
Surrounded by Japanese dancing girls wearing condoms on their heads.
Like you do. Did the condoms have little Megalon faces?
If only. Well, that'd be a collectible for you.
Megalondoms. Oh, Jesus.
Wrap that rascal in new Megalondoms.
Oh, there's a marketing idea right there. So, I bet they have in Japan.
So Toga Guy and the condom women send their two agents up to the surface.
One of them looks like Damone from Fast Times.
Yep.
Yeah.
actually, he does. Actually, I thought it was Professor Snape, and it was. I know what you're saying, but I thought he was Japanese Alan Rickman.
It could have been.
Japanese Alan Rickman and Beard Guy.
And Beard Guy, that's right.
Who I believe is referred to on screen only as that foreigner.
Yeah, Japanese don't like foreigners. Even Seatopian foreigners.
That's the rumor.
Yeah. So they are sent to retrieve the robot Jaguar.
Yes. Professor Snape and Beard Guy are sent to...
How do they know there's a robot Jaguar who isn't even completely built yet? We don't know.
Why Jaguar was built in the first place.
So a little kid can have a friend.
Everybody needs a friend.
It's the live-action version of Frankenstein.
So they are
Jr.
sent to the service by the Emperor of Seatopia to capture Jet Jaguar because they are going to send Megalon.
Who? Megalon.
Their giant monster who's like a stag beetle thing.
Yeah, big roach.
Kabuto.
Yeah.
He's a stag beetle thing.
With a big Teletubbies thing on his head.
That's his... That's his stag beetle horn, sir.
Okay, sorry.
Anyway, Megalon will be sent to the surface to rampage. However, it will be...
Like you do.
Apparently, it will be an untargeted rampage. Megalon needs someone or something to be able to guide him around so that he can rampage in the places where Togaman wants him to rampage.
Because Megalon has a poor sense of direction.
That's what they need Jet Jaguar for.
Ah, to lead him.
Jet Jaguar is going to fly around leading Megalon from place to place.
Gotcha.
To help the Seatopians execute their plan against the surface dwellers.
Because they knew not only was this guy building a robot, this robot would be able to fly.
Yeah.
Okay.
But what no one knew is that the robot would teach itself to grow into a giant in time of need.
Well,
because that happens.
They should have seen it coming. It's in Japan.
Yeah.
Just saying. So.
So that's the thing, right?
That's the basic premise of
Snape
the thing.
And Beard Guy kidnap our heroes, such as they are, and use the control devices for Jet Jaguar in the lab to fly Jet Jaguar around to lead Megalon to wherever it is they want to lead Megalon to rampage, which is primarily a quarry and some stock footage from Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, among a couple of other things.
Man.
Megalon will now attack Tokyo.
As it was years ago.
Well, conveniently, Megalon's beam that he shoots out of his stag beetle horn, what did you call it?
Teletubby's head.
There you go.
Big fly swat on his head.
The beam he shoots out of that is conveniently the same as King Ghidorah's ray.
I'm guessing that wasn't an accident.
King Ghidorah's lightning breath ray, so that they can cut away to stock footage of King Ghidorah blowing shit up.
Awesome.
Or is Ray blowing shit up, I should say.
So he's doing that.
Actually, for all my picking on this movie about using a lot of stock footage, some of it is very cleverly incorporated, I have to say.
Yeah. You know, it's so long between seeing those movies and now watching them close together, I don't remember anything being obvious to me that it was stock footage from something else.
Well, if you're super familiar with it, with the footage, then you know that you've seen it before.
Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. Too long a time between seeing them for me.
Yeah.
That I didn't notice.
But to be fair, if you've got this by this point in the series, they've got this enormous library of special effects footage.
Yeah.
And it's not like there was a home video market where people had seen these movies over and over again. And it had been just shy of 10 years since Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster was in.
Oh, yeah.
No, not since the last time they used that stock footage, mind. But almost 10 years since the first time they used it.
All right.
What are we talking about again?
Well, we're kind of run through the plot now.
Well, we're done with plot. That's all there is to it.
Actually, I was going to ask you because I forgot. Because like I said, I didn't get a chance to watch this before we decided to do the podcast here. So I'm going on just memory and very fond memories, by the way. But I don't remember why Gigan shows up.
The Cetopians put out a distress call to the dwellers, whoever they might be, in the Star Hunter M1 galaxy or Galaxy M1, however it is said.
Yeah.
Send Gigan. That's all.
Just Megalon's not doing the shit fast enough. Send Gigan.
Well, it is established by Japanese Professor Snape that Cetopians have vastly superior technology.
I'm still going Mike DeMone from Fast Times.
To whatever makes you happy. Have vastly superior technology to surface dwellers. So maybe we can extrapolate from that they have been in contact with other worlds, or simply that they were in contact with the aliens from the previous movie.
All right. All right. It all happened off camera.
When those aliens were hanging around trying to use Gigan to take over the planet, they hooked up with the Cetopians and said, "Hey, man, we like you swinging cats. You ever need anything, you let us know. We'll send Gigan because it worked out so well for us the first time."
Right on. Okay, so Gigan shows up, and our good guys have got Jaguar back under control.
Right, because so Snape DeMone is... Fair in enough. Control of Jaguar. Snape DeMone-san. Snape DeMone-san.
I will.
Is in control of Jet Jaguar using the laboratory controls, but Brother Professor.
Yes.
Has a remote control, which apparently overrides the other controls.
Little did they know.
And he uses those to regain control of Jet Jaguar.
And sends Jet Jaguar to find Godzilla.
That's right.
Understand, Jet Jaguar? Find Godzilla.
That's right.
Yeah, Jet Jaguar, find Godzilla.
I watched it subtitled. But yeah, that's...
you lost the joy of, find Godzilla!
That's that joy's all you, pal. The beauty of subtitles is the kid could really have been a really bad actor in Japanese, and I wouldn't
never know. And find Godzilla he does. Jet Jaguar flies all the way to Monster Island.
Yeah.
Does his arm sign language only, monster sign.
His air traffic control.
Yeah. His monster semaphore. That Godzilla understands completely.
Yeah.
And then just throws his thumb over his shoulder.
Let us not forget that Godzilla indicates that he understands this completely.
With a right on.
With a right on, that's right.
Yeah.
And a sage nod.
And then jumps into the water and...
And then the stock footage jumps into the water.
Yeah, that.
And swims to mainland Japan very, very slowly.
But he gets there.
He does.
And that's when the fun starts.
And we should point out two things that we alluded to earlier, which is Brother Professor now has remote control, but loses it because Jet Jaguar has the ability to override external control and give himself commands.
He's become sentient.
And not only that, as we said earlier, he teaches himself how to grow into a giant in time of
need. By using giant monster semaphore.
That's right. Yep.
That's what causes it.
And that's not just me saying, oh, did he teach himself? It's said on screen.
Yeah.
He reprogrammed himself to be able to do that.
Like you do.
Because, yeah.
Yeah. And we're glad he did.
And we're very glad he did.
But this is also, now this is the Godzilla film where we do get the great scene at the end after they've just dispatched.
Oh, don't skip ahead. Don't skip ahead.
Okay.
Come on.
Well, there's the big fight.
Don't give away the big, because I got a lot to say about that fight now. Come on.
Okay. Well, let's say it.
Before we go there, though, let us not forget the great scene or scenes after the Cetopians have lost control of Jet Jaguar, and Jet Jaguar is no longer leading Megalon where Megalon is to go. Megalon is now left to his own devices.
Ah, okay.
Where he just starts hopscotching across the countryside.
Oh. He's like jumping. Just like 4 feet at a time.
Yeah, but not like, you know, Thousand League Leap travel. Not like Hulk style.
It's like he's doing hopscotch.
It's literally. Like he's playing hopscotch. He's just goofing around having a good time. And now it's clear to us why they needed Jet Jaguar to control Megalon, because left to his own devices.
He's retarded.
It's also why he's dangerous. He's got that targe drink.
Oh, we're going to hell. Okay, so targe strength, right? Okay. So he's hopscotching, is what he's you're saying.
He's hopscotching across the countryside or the quarry or wherever the hell they're shooting this thing.
Soundstage, whatever. Yeah. Whatever.
No, I think it's a location okay. of some kind.
So that's why Jaguar's leading him, and they bring Gigan in. And Gigan, Jet Jaguar has taken off at that point to get Godzilla, so Megalon is left on his own, hopscotching.
Well, Jet Jaguar returns to confront Megalon. Because, you know, he hasn't just been hopscotching. He's been, you know, stock footaging shit to death.
Oh, okay. You know, right on.
tearing up the cityscape, sort of.
Stock footage and shit to death. All right. Yeah.
And then Jet Jaguar shows up to confront him.
Okay.
And I believe Jet Jaguar rescues our forgotten protagonists from the imminent danger of something. And they tussle.
They start having
do our Jetto Jagga.
Engaging in fisticuffs.
Megaro, or such as it is with the drill hands. Such as it is my...
I forgot to mention the drill hands earlier. From yeah. This,
Well, Megalon has a lot of cool powers, right? So he's got Ghidorah's beam, which is, you know, yeah. again, convenient.
Comes out of Willie Johnson on his forehead.
He shoots napalm grenades out of his mouth.
Yeah.
Also awesome.
Yeah.
He can, he's got those drill hands.
That he can't pick up shit with.
No, but he can, you know, drill you.
Yeah.
And then he can burrow underground.
Yeah.
And pop up again.
Yeah. Right underneath you.
There's actually, speaking of clever use of stock footage, like, so there's this bit where... And I hope I have this right from memory, or else other Godzilla fans are going to crucify me. But there's this bit where you see the self-defense force firing at Megalon.
Yeah.
Megalon quickly ducks down behind something. And then it cuts back to the self-defense force. And then it cuts to stock footage of, I think it is Anguirus from Destroy All Monsters running behind some trees, but the trees are obscuring him. So all you can see is something running behind the trees,
yeah.
And then back to self-defense force shooting, and then back to the Megalon popping up like he's just been running behind something, right?
Oh, I gotta go look at that now.
That's great.
And to see if I can pick Anguirus out. That's awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so they fight, and then Gigan arrives. And the tide turns against poor old Jetto Jagga, and he starts getting his iron butt whipped by the tag team of Gigan and Megalon.
And they do tag team him, I think, don't they? Don't they actually slap claws at
Well, they kind of high-five hooked drill. And it looks like one's tagging in the other for this here wrestling match. But then they both proceed to kick the shit out of Jet Jaguar after the tag. So if it's a tag match, then it must be an ECW-style tag match. And my wrestling people will know what the hell I meant by that.
Until...
Finally...
We hear the music.
The Goji has come back!
And Godzilla shows up doing the Rocky pose with the arms pumping above the head and everything.
He does his little, stomp and rub the hands together, prepare to have a judo match routine.
And put him up above his head like, yeah! Because he knows what's happening.
So we should talk about the suit at this point. This is the debut of what I like to call puppy face Godzilla.
The big eyes, short snout.
The big eyes with the brown pupils and the short snout. Very sort of cute.
Almost cartoon-like, in a way.
And any pretense of these being animals with animal behaviors is gone. I mean, these are just totally anthropomorphic creatures at this point. And short digression. I'll try to keep it short. There was a time when I had a strong preference for the more majestic force of nature characterization of Godzilla. The more dangerous animal-like characterization of Godzilla, and was not super into this anthropomorphic superhero version of Godzilla. But being interested in all kinds of Japanese special effects movies and TV shows camp, and being in an era where it's finally possible to see a lot of this stuff, of the 70s and 80s stuff, particularly, which is what I tend to prefer. I've just sort of come to appreciate the whole spectrum of these things and the influence that all this other stuff had on Godzilla that sort of led to where we are here. And when I say that it's like a really long, it's like a long episode of one of these TV shows.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot that goes into that. Like I said, the presentation and the fact that it seems like we're supposed to already care, and the fact
that I totally know who these
people are, and the fact that, you know, it's using super robots and all these things that were popular on television at the time. But when you get to this, the final fight, the four-way tornado tag match between these three kaiju and a robot.
It's a sitcom.
It really has a lot of the appeal of that fun TV stuff. But while you can argue that the anthropomorphic behaviors and the obvious budgetary cheapness of it do not compare favorably to the 60s Godzilla movies, if you look at it as a bigger budget version of one of the TV shows, it becomes this sort of magnificent thing, right? Where it's just longer and more detailed and deeper and more fun than any of those other things had the time or the budget to make them. You know what I mean?
Of course.
So that's how I see it now. And because of that, this movie has really risen in my rankings, because this final, this final fight, which is long, is much fun.
Yeah,
and we keep making wrestling references, and that's no coincidence, because this is very much a wrestling match. Yeah. And like a good wrestling match, they say, tells a story. And this fight tells a story. I mean, you can follow, you know, the ups and downs and highs and lows and turns of the tide in this match, you know, very clearly all the way through it.
So it's awesome.
It's a lot of fun.
They do some great moves, man. They do some cheesy moves too, but they do some great moves. I mean, the ones that stand out is they get encircled by fire.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, why Godzilla can't just walk through that little circle of fire, I don't know. But we don't need to know, because then they do something awesome.
Yeah.
He puts his arms on Jet Jaguar's shoulders after Jet Jaguar does some more monster sign language. And Jet Jaguar flies them both right over to fire. And he's just holding on to his shoulders, and it's awesome. And as a kid, especially as a kid, you're like, that's awesome. And as an adult, I'm like, that's awesome.
But my favorite part of that, aside from the two of them flying off together, which is awesome, the other little thing that just makes it, and again, this ties into why the anthropomorphic behaviors, the human-like behaviors of the monsters in this movie are a strength and not a weakness.
Yeah.
For the entertainment value of them and how it helps them tell a wrestling match story, right?
Uh-huh.
Is it keeps cutting to reaction shots of Megalon and Gigan watching the other two surrounded by fire, and they're like jumping up and down and rubbing their hands together, and they're all excited. It looks like they're like laughing to themselves or whatever. Just the body language of it with the suit acting.
Uh-huh.
They're just having a rip-roaring good time. And then when Jet Jaguar flies them both off out of the fire, it cuts back to the other two, and they're like, oh man,
stomping their feet and kicking dirt.
It's great.
But the move to end all moves, they have dispatched Gigan, and Gigan has said, screw you guys, I'm going home. And Jet Jaguar looks like he broke Megalon's arm, and he's holding him and motions to Godzilla. And Godzilla backs up, takes a running start, and slides on his tail with his feet in the air and drop kicks. Slides right into Megalon.
The tail slide drop kick. That's right.
Awesome move. Awesome. I still have the same enthusiasm for it now as I did when I was a kid.
Yeah. That's great.
I'm waiting the whole movie just to see that now.
Well, I mean, right from the very beginning of the fight, though, going back a little bit, so the two bad guy kaiju have put the beat down on poor old Jet Jaguar, who's just hurting.
Yeah, they like literally beat him into the ground where his shoulders are sticking out of the dirt.
And Godzilla shows up. And the other two are like, uh-oh. And they back off, and Godzilla sort of circles around.
Hey.
And he gets over to where Jet Jaguar is, and he's like covering Jet Jaguar, so the other two will back off.
Yeah.
And Jet Jaguar gets up and
shakes hands with Godzilla.
He grabs Godzilla's arms like Spartacus style, and gives him the big emphatic shake of the head like, thanks, Godzilla.
That's right.
And then like Godzilla turns to acknowledge this friendly greeting that he's received from Jet Jaguar, and that's when Megalon, because he's a bitch, decides to to rush Godzilla while he's looking away, and the fight begins. Yeah. And you can, and then they start to tussle, and you can forget about, again, animalistic biting or clawing. Godzilla is just landing haymakers, right?
And at one point, he rips up a tree and just like walking talls him with,
that's right.
Him with a 2x4 with the tree.
He really does.
Yeah. Take that, you son of a bitch.
And then Godzilla's down, and Megalon shoots one of those napalm grenades, and Jet Jaguar like is like, grenade! And he, you know, grabs it and throws it across the quarry.
One of them like grab it, like I don't know if Godzilla, I think this is, he catches it and throws it back, and it goes right back down Megalon's throat.
Yeah, that's later.
Smoke starts coming out of his mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, that's like, they do that, and then Jet Jaguar gives Megalon the arm breaker.
Yeah.
Right, which is awesome. No, not Megalon. Sorry, Gigan.
He gives Gigan
the arm breaker.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
which is awesome. And then that's when Gigan makes his escape, and that's when Megalon gets up, and Jet Jaguar holds him for the drop kick. But
now they try to, one of them tries to fly away, and Godzilla just atomic breaths them, and they drop like a stone.
Yeah, that happens.
I can't remember if it's Gigan or if it's,
yeah, I don't remember right Megalon. Now. Well, it's got to be Gigan if it's flying. So. Yeah. Well, the other thing I like is when Megalon and Gigan are both down, and Godzilla wants to make sure they're out, he goes over and gives Megalon a kick.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like, yeah, okay, you're down. And he's satisfied. He walks away and he goes over to Gigan. He gives Gigan a kick, but clearly he's not satisfied. He kind of stays there for a minute looking at Gigan like, And then sure enough, Gigan pops up and gives him the old buzzsaw across the shoulder routine.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Godzilla knew something. He's messed with that cat before.
Yeah.
Thank God for the state of toy making today. Because the figures, when I was a kid, I would have killed to have had a Godzilla, a Jet Jaguar, Megalon, Gigan figures. And there just wasn't. At least here, there wasn't. In the States, the closest thing we could get was, I don't know if it was around the same time or a few years later, were the Shogun Warriors Godzilla, which I still have to this day. And, of course, the Shoguns, of course, Mazinga was a stand-in for Jet Jaguar, mm-hmm. when I played with them, but because they had the same mouth, you know. But and then later on, there was a Bendy Godzilla that came out that I had, and then there was a little Bandai Godzilla, which wasn't a great design. I should still had it. I don't. And a Bandai came out of the Megalon, but I don't remember that when I was a kid. I have it now, but I don't remember it then. But now, my God. The stuff that's come out, even the stuff that's not super expensive, I've got like 4 or 5 Jet Jaguar figures. My God. My God. And I've got a Godzilla and a Gigan and a Megalon that are same scale, and it's beautiful. And then the stuff, like the ones that you collect, the nice, what are they, about a foot and a half tall or something, most of them, something like that?
Well, some of them are some of them are 8 inches and some of them are 12 inches.
Yeah, those real nice ones.
Scale. From, 12 inch scale, 8 inch scale.
Yeah, it's beautiful figures from Japan. But nothing like that back then that we had access to anyway. No, but now they're beautiful. Man.
In Japan at the time these were out, you had, you know, vinyl figures of all these kaiju, which were more stylized and less accurate.
Yeah.
Than even the Bandais that you would get.
Yeah.
Later, so you had I think it was Bullmark did the vinyl Megalon and the Jet Jaguar, which
and they did a flying Jet Jaguar too, a little like 4 or 5 inch one.
Yeah. And I love those things. I mean, you know, they're not screen accurate representations, even to the level, again, that Bandai would later do. They're stylized toys with multicolored paint jobs and sort of bulky shapes and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they're really, really charming. There's something about that era and style of Japanese vinyls that I find really appealing, and there's a whole retro market for that stuff nowadays.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, they're fun. I mean, the fact that they were out. I mean, what did we have out at that time? That was before the big Star Wars boom.
Yeah.
So we had Migos, which were awesome. But as far as monsters like that.
Well, you had the Aurora Godzilla kit, right? Which,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is not a toy, but I mean, it's at least a figural representation of Godzilla, which I think that's based on the King Kong versus Godzilla suit, right? The 62.
Yeah. Which is probably my second favorite Godzilla design.
Oh, I love that suit. I love that suit.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And typically is when people think of Godzilla, that's the look they kind of think of.
I don't know.
Maybe not now, but it's hard for me to say. Time. Well, it's like whenever you see people think of Frankenstein or whatever, typically it's the Glenn Strange look more. And when you see people draw Frankenstein or think of Frankenstein or whatever, because that went on a lot of merchandising, yeah. You know, and that Godzilla was more seen or prominent.
Yeah, you know,
I
you're
think.
Probably right, because when I talked about
typical general in general, you know,
when I talk about the ubiquity of Godzilla Megalon on television, or seeming, well, ubiquity is an overstatement, but the fact that that was one you could catch more easily than others,
yeah,
when we were growing up, that's true. But I think probably the other one that was very accessible was King Kong versus Godzilla, right? Probably because of the King Kong.
Probably. And like connection. I said, that look was the model.
Yeah.
You know, and if you had...
particularly for that 60s generation.
Yeah. And even people who weren't so much into the classic monsters, if they had one of the models, it was probably Godzilla.
Yeah. When did that come out originally?
I was reading a book not too long ago on the Aurora monster model. And the history of it all. And I don't remember when the Godzilla came out. Of course, it was one of the later ones. Well, I say later. Godzilla did have a long box, though. So it wasn't the later, but it wasn't the first run. It was like, I think Frankenstein was first, and that took off, and they made a couple more. And the Godzilla was like the last of the initial run. I cannot remember.
Well, anyway.
Anyway, regardless. That's
getting into some arcane
eras. You know what?
Here.
Didn't have a Jet Jaguar kit. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
they did have a beautiful one. They did the Monsters of the Movies line, you know, the snap together kits.
Yeah,
they had a beautiful Gator and Rodan kit, though. Both of those were
I suspect awesome. That some of the Megalon and some of the other 70s kaiju are more popular outside of Japan, proportionally anyway, amid, you know, people who actually care about this stuff one way or the other, are disproportionately popular outside of Japan.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because there's just not as much product around Megalon, Jet Jaguar, Titanosaurus, as there is your Mothras and Ghidorahs and some of the other ones or whatever. I mean, they do and always have produced merchandise for those, but not nearly as much as some of the others.
Yeah, yeah.
So that
yeah, well, it's like even in the States now, I mean, you know, with no Godzilla movie to promote, within the last 10 or 15 years, there have been Godzilla product on the shelves of the toy store. You know, there was that line, Godzilla Wars or whatever, which had nothing to do with any movie.
Yeah.
But you had Godzilla, and they had a Mothra. There was a Gigan, I think, in that line. There was might have been a King Ghidorah. There was a couple of other monsters. And then there was that other line that came out not long ago, and they did the different eras of Godzilla, but I think they only did like three. And again, there was a Mothra. There was maybe an Anguirus. But you didn't see a Megalon or a Jet Jaguar. So I don't know. Who knows? Long tangent on, I don't know, not really related to the movie at all. But talking about toys.
I would not say that's unrelated to the movie.
No, not at all. Because we did start off with Jet Jaguar figures. Which you got an amazing one in recently.
Yes,
I must say. Beautiful. This figure is so, and like this line that Tony's collecting, is so accurate that it looks like, it's not a representation of the character. It's a recreation, scaled recreation of the suit.
Right.
Of the guy in the suit, where you see all the little imperfections that you see on the screen in the suit, or the wrinkles, the seam lines. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Incredible. I can't stress enough how good these figures are.
And I mean, and I really like that. And some people would rather have sort of ideal or stylized concept renderings where you take what the suit represents and make it into something that looks more like a real, you know, creature or robot or whatever it is that you're trying to go for. And I get that. That's totally cool. But I like these because just those little details are what constantly draws my eye and makes it so I don't get tired of looking at them.
Yeah.
Because a lot of stuff that I have, even if I really, really like it, sometimes I just get tired of seeing it.
Yeah.
You know, but when you've got those little granular things,
yeah,
that
just
catch
the detail
the eye,
is amazing.
Then
it was
then it's
even
all, they
thought
always,
of.
They make me smile. Nobody cares about this but us. You know,
yeah, that's true. That's true. Or maybe some of the collectors, you know, hey, where'd you get that one? But, well, you know, I'm glad that you've come back around to liking or appreciating Godzilla versus Megalon in a almost a new light.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
Yeah, well, it's there's a process with these things as a Godzilla enthusiast. I mean, at first you caught a few on TV when you could.
Yeah.
And when you first start really getting into it, it's, you just want to see all the stuff. Which is hard enough to do, at least, you know, back in those days. And then you go from I want to see all the stuff to I want to see the stuff in the best possible presentation. So
yeah,
uncut and hopefully a good print that doesn't have the color bleached out of it like a lot of the TV prints we used to see did, and not cropped, and you know, see it in the original aspect ratio. In my case, I like to see them in the original Japanese with subtitles.
Yeah.
And so then you get to start seeing them in their most complete form. And then, you know, you start to sort of define your preferences where, oh, well, this is the kind of Godzilla I like the most. And whenever I see these others, I'm going to hold them against that standard or whatever.
Yeah.
And then eventually I got to the point where I've seen them all in the best presentation I can find many times. And you stop watching them through the lens of be what I want you to be and start watching them through the lens of, let me just see what you are.
Yeah.
And particularly if you can put them in, or for me, I mean, some people don't care about this, but if I can put them in sort of their place and time contextually, uh-huh. like I talked about with understanding what else was going on in Japanese pop culture.
I talked about this recently.
Then it just gives you a different perspective and you can just sort of relax. And so, you know, I kind of got to the point, there really aren't any Toho Godzilla movies that I actively dislike. There are some that I like far less than others.
Yeah.
But just pure entertainment value goes a long way.
For
pure entertainment value, it gets hard. It is pretty difficult to beat, you know, those last 15 minutes or however long it is of Godzilla versus Megalon.
Well, you know, even the anticipation of it coming. Little snippets you're fed of Jaguar and then Megalon. You know, first you see the robot with no head on. You're like, oh, okay, he's building a robot. Finish building a robot! And then he finishes building. And then you see a little bit of him moving and stuff. And then he takes off. And you're like, when's he coming back? What's he going to do? So you know, you get a little bit of rope, you know, giving you a little bit each time. So you have that anticipation to that final fight, and it doesn't let you down once it gets there. And like what you said, you take it in the context of when it was made, what else was going on. I find that that's true with a lot of things. If you enjoy it within the context of when it was made and what else was going on around, I gave a talk at MarsCon on the superhero serials and preface it by, okay, I know that, you know, they're dated, they're quaint, they're all this. I said, but take into context when they were made, what was going on in the world, what was going on in the comics they were taken from, what society and all was generally like then. They're a lot of fun. Take them in a historical context, basically. Don't try to watch them with the mindset of watching the superhero movies today. And it's the same thing with the Godzilla films. You know, you take into context, like you said, when it was made, what they were working with, what was going on. I think, you know, you can see them with a little different view than if people have grown up with the ones in the 90s or whatever, you know. Now, what do you remember what your first Godzilla film was?
I honestly don't. I mean, I remember I mentioned King Kong and Godzilla.
Yeah.
And I mentioned, or versus Godzilla. And I remember Godzilla Megalon being one I definitely saw in Gigan. So it would have to have been one of those three, but I don't remember which one I saw first.
Yeah, because I know they were shown on TV a lot. Either we had the 6:30 movie around here way back then, and then 6:30 in the afternoon or evening, you'd get a movie every day. And a couple times a year, they would do Monster Week or Planet of the Apes Week, which was awesome.
Now, I remember Planet of the Apes Week.
But sometimes they do Monster Week. Sometimes it'd be Universal. Sometimes it'd be B-grade. Sometimes it'd be Godzilla Week. Or they'd slip a Godzilla in there, or Dr. Madblood would show a Godzilla movie or something. But the ones that seemed to be in rotation the most were King Kong versus Godzilla, Godzilla versus the Thing, which is Mothra. And I saw Monster Zero later on when I was a little bit older, maybe just almost a teenager. But that was late night. That wasn't prime time. But it was like those two, and then I saw Megalon at the theater. I don't remember a whole lot others being shown on TV until much later, you know. Because then after that, because I guess Godzilla vs. Megalon did pretty good over here, because then they released Godzilla vs. the Bionic Monster, trying to cash in on the bionic craze. Of course, it was Mechagodzilla. That was released to theaters over here, but I didn't get to see that one, though, in the theater. And then that one started to show up on TV later on.
Well, that brings us around to your point of why didn't they use Jet Jaguar again. And it even ends, if you remember, with Brother Professor and company saying, let's go home, Jaguar, something or other, until he's needed again, you know.
Yeah.
Pointing to the fact that Jet Jaguar could return, but he does not. But robots don't go away.
Yeah.
Because we get a robot.
Oh, yeah.
In the very next.
A robot Godzilla
movie, and a robot antagonist.
Yeah.
Which I don't know that another tag team with Jet Jaguar would really have worked against that robot antagonist. That's one robot too many.
Could have been. Could have been, yeah.
Now, the big foo dog that we got instead, King Caesar, I don't know.
The temple dog, yeah. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of, I have to go back and watch it again, because it's been a long time, but I wasn't a big fan of King Caesar when I saw him initially. I guess I was still stuck on Jet Jaguar.
Well, I like him fine, but I really like in the next one after that with Terror of Mechagodzilla with Titanosaurus.
Oh.
That's a good one.
Hey, here's the thing. The guy that was in the Gigan suit.
Yeah.
I don't know if he was in the previous movie Gigan, but I think he also was Hedorah, was in the Hedorah suit, the Smog Monster suit.
You know, I'm ashamed to say there was a time when I could have told you that, but...
Yeah, I think I read... I was trying to do a little research, you know, last night on this.
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think he was in that. And didn't one of the guys who was one of the bad guy monsters, didn't he eventually become Godzilla? Am I remembering that wrong?
Yeah, I don't remember that either. Okay. I'm sorry.
Not that anybody cares anyway. I mean, yeah. Not like you recognize him outside
the
suit.
Well, I care.
but yeah, it's, you know, these guys just moving right along up the ranks.
Yeah.
But the guy that played Jaguar, never heard from again.
Well, that's a tragedy.
Actually, I read two different accounts. I was, like I said, last night doing a little research. And one thing, on IMDb, it just has one guy listed as Jet Jaguar. But then I was looking somewhere else, and I had two guys listed as Jet Jaguar.
Hmm.
But I couldn't find anything else about it, and then I went to bed. But
well, you can't forget to, before we wrap up, you can't forget to mention the Jet Jaguar fight song.
Oh, great theme song. Great theme song. We're not going to sing it.
I just wish it went on longer.
Yeah.
I have the soundtrack where it goes on longer.
Oh, here's another thing. What? Speaking of the Jet Jaguar theme song, do you think a lot of people's first experience could have been a MST3K?
Yes, I'm sure it was.
Yeah. And that's the way I feel about it, too.
Yeah. Well, I have watched many, many hours of Mystery Science Theater. I like Mystery Science Theater. And
yeah.
Like our friend always used to say, the movies don't have to be bad for Mystery Science Theater to be funny. They really could have do that same shtick to anything, and it would be funny. Uh-huh. And I get that, but unfortunately, those things have helped to shape today's general pop culture idea of what those movies are in a way that's unfortunate. Like so I talked earlier about seeing them in the best possible shape. Well, the TV print of Godzilla versus the Sea Monster that they used for the Mystery Science Theater episode on which they covered that movie is, I don't even know if you can legit call it pan and scan. A lot of times it doesn't even look like they bothered to do any scanning or panning. They just lop the sides off of a scope, you know, movie.
Yeah.
It's totally bleached of color.
Yeah.
Dubbed as everything was dubbed, you know, back in the day. And shorn of all context and presented like that, it looks like a cheap piece of crap. But if you see that movie in a decent print, it's this colorful, utterly charming romp of a movie that's often very nice to look at, very well shot.
Talking about Sea Monster.
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, it really is.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one.
And so it's not, so it's like, look, if you see the real movie and you still think it's laughable, okay, I mean, that's your opinion, but it's just a little irksome that this sort of mutilated and riffed upon version of something like that is the one that people go, oh, yeah, I remember that, ha-ha, and I'm like, all right, I can say that about several other things that they did, even though I like the show.
Yeah. You know? Wait, before we wrap up here, let's talk about that. Just say the print of Godzilla vs. Megalon. You know, for the longest time, I had a VHS copy. I had a bad VHS copy. Then I had a better VHS copy. Then it finally, took forever, and it finally came out on DVD. But this was after Blu-rays had come out and were taking off. So I waited, and I finally got it on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Now, that is the nicest print that's available right now.
Yes.
Correct? Okay. Yes. Can't remember who put it out. Yeah.
Oh, was it Media Blasters?
Could have been. It's easy to get it. You can get it on Amazon relatively cheap. They even had it at the FYE, had copies of it. So it's easy to find. If you like the Godzilla movies, this is a must for the collection, or at least a viewing. And that is the best print of it available. So go out and get it now.
Yeah, it is crazy to me. And then not all of the Godzilla movies, unfortunately, are available on Blu-ray here yet, in the States yet.
Yeah.
But all of the second and third series are. The Heisei and Millennium, complete, all of it.
Wow.
As good a presentation as the, in terms of, you know, audiovisual presentation, as the Japanese Blu-rays, because it's the same transfers.
Yeah.
And subtitles. So great, right? If you are into that sort of thing. unfortunately, not all of the 60s and 70s movies are out yet, but I think it'll happen. And there are some of them that are out.
Yeah.
Actually, no. I was going to say all the 70s ones are out, but they're not, because the Mechagodzilla movies aren't. But yeah, I mean, we've got a few, and hopefully more on the way, but there is a Criterion Blu-ray of the first Godzilla movie.
Oh, yes, yes.
How crazy is that? That is not the world from which I emerged, you know? I mean, it is insane to me. I was actually talking to somebody about this recently. It is insane to me to think of all the different home video iterations of some of these movies owned in just the past 15 years or so, right? From VHS to a better VHS copy to... I am given to understand that some people managed to acquire subtitled bootleg copies of the Japanese DVDs back in the day. I'm not saying I condone this behavior.
I've heard about that.
I am just given to understand that some people have done these things. To Hong Kong DVD releases, to finally US DVD releases that are less than ideally presented. And now we have these Blu-rays, which are pretty ideally presented.
Yeah.
But to have gone from... a period where it actually took quite a bit of work to see all these movies.
Uh-huh.
If you did not live in a area that happened to do a lot of this stuff theatrically, because there are a couple of those that are there.
Yeah.
To now is nuts, but it's cool. You know, I'd much rather have easy access to the best material.
Of course.
I mean, the adventure of hunting it.
Oh, that's a thrill.
We'll always have some nostalgia for that. But
to be able just to sit down and go, okay, I want to watch this, and I want to see everything.
I mean, thank goodness if you get a wild hair and decide, I'm going to watch this Ibira Horror of the Deep or Godzilla versus the Sea Monster, whatever you want to call it, that this weirdo is talking about.
Yeah.
That you can sit down with a really nice-looking presentation of that movie and see it for what it actually is.
Or even Godzilla versus Megalon.
If you don't like what it actually is, hey, man, that's your taste, but at least you can see it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and there you have it. I think we about did it.
I think we wrung this thing dry.
Hey, you know, I know we're going to record a couple more here soon together. And here's a thought. Since we're on Kaiju, Giant Monsters, there's one I think we need to do. One. It may be a short one. I don't know. But we should give consideration to Super Inframan. Just saying. Just throwing that out there. All right. We're going to leave with that. And thanks for being back, Tony. We're going to do a few more here soon together. Not to mention probably the three-way, which will probably be a three-parter with Dr. Sayre on
Karloff
Frankenstein series. I've been talking about it for a while. We're going to...
Clayton, I've been looking forward to this one for a long time, buddy.
Via satellite in the lounge.
It's very exciting.
That'll be coming up before too long, I promise. But until then, thanks for listening. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.